Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 9, Text 41. This text isn't written up, is it? It's just a prose text. So I'll just read the Sanskrit and then the translation. Asmakam tavakanam tata tata natanam hare tavacharana nalina yugala jananubhada hridaya nigadanam svalinga vivaranenatmasat kritanam anukampanuranjita vishadaruchira shishira smitavalokena Vigalita madura mukara samrita kalaya chantas tapam anagrahasi samaitam. So here the demigods are speaking, addressing the Supreme Lord. O Supreme Protector, O Grandfather, O Supreme Pure, O Lord, we are all surrendered souls at your lotus feet. Indeed, our minds are bound to your lotus feet in meditation by chains of love. Now, please manifest your incarnation, accepting us as your own eternal servants and devotees. Be pleased with us and sympathetic toward us by your love-filled glance with its cool and pleasing smile of sympathy, and by the sweet nectarian words emanating from your beautiful face. Free us from the anxiety caused by this Ritra Asura, who always pains the cores of our hearts. Purport, Lord Brahma is considered the father of the demigods, but Krishna, or Lord Vishnu, is the father of Brahma, because Brahma took birth from the lotus flower growing from the Lord's abdomen. Ritra Asura, as you know, was previously Chitraketu Maharaj, and once he was flying in his flower airplane over Kailash and saw Lord Shiva sitting surrounded by great sages, but he also had his wife on his lap, so it seemed a very incongruous situation. How could Lord Shiva do like that in the presence of such great sages? And Chitraketu was laughing, and Parvati, the wife of Lord Shiva, she became offended and cursed him to take birth as a demon. So in this way he took birth as Ritrasura. It's a very powerful demon and created a lot of difficulties for the demigods, so much so that they approached the Supreme Lord for protection. I was noticing the last purport here, which Srila Prabhupada is discussing the difference between Sakama and Akama devotees. This is a very nice observation here. The Akama devotees, they are always absorbed fully in Krishna consciousness, and even if they're in danger or difficulty, they don't disturb the Lord trying to get benefits from him or protection for him from him, but they rather accept whatever difficulties have come as a result of their past misdeeds, and they also see those difficulties as an opportunity to simply depend on the Lord, meditate on the Lord. They have confidence the Lord's hand is there in everything, and He's acting ultimately for their benefit. So in this way, they just remain Krishna conscious in all situations. Obviously, a very wonderful state of consciousness. Someone is in such state of consciousness that he never has any worries, even amidst the greatest difficulties. We see how Queen Kunti, she prayed that the difficulties would happen again in her prayers to Krishna. She prays that the difficulties would happen again because thus we would remember you again and again, and remembering you is the only way to cross over the ocean of birth and death. So on the other hand, the Sakama devotees, they have material attachments and worries, and because of that, they do get difficulties. One of the reasons that they get difficulties from demons or demigods, for example, is because of their desire to enjoy material opulence. So there's a kind of reaction for that in the shape of disturbance from the demons. Demons, of course, when they're in difficulty, think they can solve all the problems themselves. They never consider calling on the Lord, praying to the Lord. And they're very proud of their own material prowess. So this is a very materialistic, demonic mentality. But the demigods, even though they have material desires, and even though they get disturbance from demons as a result, nevertheless, when they're in difficulty, they approach the Lord for help. And because they are devotees, the Lord does reciprocate and helps them in their difficulty, protects them. So there are so many instances in the Bhagavatam when the demigods were in difficulty and approached the Lord, and the Lord appeared, helped them in some way. Just like when they were defeated by Bali Maharaj, the Lord appeared in the form of Amanadev to save the demigods. When Hiranyakashipu defeated the demigods and occupied the throne of Indra, Lord appeared as Nrisringa. Of course, that's also because of Prahlad Maharaj being such a pure devotee of the Lord. But there are many such instances. The Lord is the well-wisher and protector of his devotees. But better to be, of course, akama devotee, having no worries, having full confidence in the Lord's arrangement and not disturbing the Lord for any reason. But if not, of course, being a sakama devotee is much better than being a non-devotee or a demon. So, how to get to the stage of becoming akama? This is a gradual process. One has to go from the stage of being a non-devotee or a demon to come somehow to the stage of being a practicing devotee, even if with material desires. And then gradually, one can reduce those material desires and hopefully come to the akama stage, the highest stage of Krishna consciousness. The process, of course, is that of steadily following the path of Krishna consciousness, which has been chalked out by the previous acharyas, ultimately which, of course, is given by the Lord Himself. This is the method. Even if there are obstacles and difficulties on the way, one is advised to stick to the path. In his book, Madhurya Kadambini, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on the verse of Rupa Goswami, Ado Shraddha Tata Sadhu Sangha Tato Narta Nivritti Shatan, which delineates different stages of advancement on the path of Krishna consciousness, from Shraddha to Prem. Sometimes we see courses given by devotees from Shraddha to Prem. From initially having some interest and preliminary faith in Krishna consciousness, and then going through the various stages of practicing, engaging in devotional service and purifying the heart and coming up to the stage of pure love for Krishna. So he's discussing how in the beginning, when one becomes engaged in bhajana kriya, devotional service under the guidance of his spiritual master, bona fide spiritual master, that his service is anishta. It is not fully fixed and steady due to the presence of various anartas which trouble the devotee in varieties of ways, like being unable to keep to vows, or trying to enjoy the fruits of one's service. And when one is engaged in devotional service, Krishna may send various fruits and benefits. But if one tries to enjoy those, this is a kind of obstacle on the path. So these are caused by anartas, impurities in the heart. So how to overcome these anartas? He advises one should simply go on steadily following the path of Krishna consciousness, and gradually the consciousness will become purified and he can come to the stage of anartha nivritti, being freed from impurities. Of course, steadily following the path, that includes many things, such as associating with serious devotees, studying the scriptures, being armed with transcendental knowledge is definitely a big plus on the path of spiritual progress. Avoiding offenses, consciously endeavoring to avoid offenses, this is also very important. But most important is to go on chanting Hare Krishna and engaging in devotional service. And in this way, gradually, the anartas will drop away and a person can become nishta, fixed in his bhajana kriya, in his devotional service, and then can progress further to higher levels of deep attachment to Krishna and love for Krishna. In Srila Prabhupada has also quoted a verse from the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam in the previous purport, Tatenu Kampam Shusimiksamano Bunjana Evatma Kritam Vipakam Ridvagvapur Bir Vidadan Namaste Jiveta Yumukti Pade Sadaya Bak. It's a famous verse. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, when he quoted the verse, changed the word mukti to bhakti. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked him, why are you changing the words of the Bhagavatam? He said, well, previously I was an impersonalist, I was striving for mukti. Now that I've taken shelter of your lotus feet, I cannot tolerate the sound of that word. I want only bhakti. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, well, mukti pada also, it means Krishna. He's the giver of liberation. So, no need to change the words. But again, later Sarvabhauma quoted the verse and changed again to bhakti. Lord Chaitanya simply laughed and embraced him. He said, you're a real devotee. But anyhow, this verse tells how a devotee who is sincere goes on practicing Krishna consciousness despite all kinds of difficulties and obstacles on the path. He will become eligible to go to the spiritual world because it has become his rightful claim, just as a son has a rightful claim to the father's property. In the same way, the devotee who is always steadily engaged in devotional service, he gets that rightful claim to go back to Godhead. But he has to be determined, he has to be steady, going on with his devotional service, his glorification of the Lord, in all circumstances, tolerating all difficulties. Difficulties which may have been produced from his previous misdeeds, or for whatever reason those difficulties come. Well, he'll see it like that. The Akama devotees, Prabhupada says here, they see that difficulties they face as a result of their previous misdeeds, even though that might be some test sent by the Lord, still the devotee will tend to see like that because he's humble, considers himself unqualified, considers that he's done so many unnecessary things in the past, undesirable things. In fact, he may feel that he should have received a much greater reaction, but because of his taking to Krishna consciousness, the reactions have been reduced very considerably, and he thanks the Lord for his mercy upon him in that way. So anyway, there's a lot to be said for simply executing steady devotional service with firm determination, not letting anything drag one away from the process of Krishna consciousness. No matter how great the allurements or how great the difficulties may be, somehow or other stick to chanting Hare Krishna, stick to the association of devotees. Sometimes we see that devotees who have taken initiation, who were, say, enthusiastic brahmacharis, when they become householders, they become a bit lax in their practice. Maybe here that doesn't happen so much. Very serious community of grihastas here. That's very wonderful. But some places we see like that, especially in the Western world, devotees, in fact, may even get to the stage of giving up their chanting. This is very regrettable, of course. There are a lot of pressures, obviously, in family life, especially in the Western culture. Devotees aren't vigilant. They may become weakened by bad association. But somehow or other, if they can go on chanting Hare Krishna, not give it up completely, at least maintain some level of hearing and chanting, because after some time the pressures may be reduced and they can again pick up and increase their spiritual practices. Whereas if they give up completely, this is very dangerous. One may not be able to get back to the practice of Krishna consciousness even for many, many lifetimes. So somehow or other, better not to stop at all. Even if there is some reduction, which of course we're not recommending, but we see that it happens. Somehow or other, keep that connection with Krishna, keep it alive, and in this way live to, you know, fight another day to increase one's practice and the attentiveness of one's practice, and thus be able to again become strong in Krishna consciousness and speed up one's spiritual advancement. So even if one is in a category, Sakama, devotee, and most of us are to one extent or another, Akama devotees are rare, they're very pure and elevated personalities, and of course there are such devotees in our sampradaya, in our movement, but most devotees to some extent or another, they'll be having some kind of material aspirations. Once Prabhupada even said that most of my disciples are trying for the heavenly planets. Well, heavenly planets, demigods are also devotees. That's not the worst thing, but still, it's not the recommended thing. Krishna is not recommending that in Bhagavad Gita. He's teaching us about pure devotional service. So these kind of material desires are definitely a big obstacle on the path of spiritual life. But still, it should not be reason to give up practicing Krishna consciousness. Sometimes we'll hear a devotee say that, oh, I can't chant attentively, I got too many material desires, better to stop completely. But that's not correct. Better to go on chanting even if there are material desires. Somehow keep that connection to Krishna, because Krishna is present in His holy name and He responds even to the Sakama devotees. This purport is a clear proof of that. Krishna doesn't forsake His devotees even if they are having difficulties or they're troubled by material desires. Still He will reciprocate. He prefers, of course, the devotion of the Akama devotees, but all His devotees are dear to Him and He will reciprocate with them and help them. So therefore there's no reason whatsoever to give up the practice of Krishna consciousness. Giving up, one will just be sucked down into the whirlpool of material existence and may have to transmigrate through many different species of life before again getting the opportunity to practice Krishna consciousness. So now we have the human form of life. Most of you appeared in the land of Bharatvarsa. This is a special privilege. Whether appearing in Bharatvarsa or the Western countries, still all have had the opportunity to get Lord Chaitanya's mercy and take to the process of practicing Krishna consciousness. So we shouldn't lose this opportunity. We should take it with open arms and apply it as much as we can, as diligently as we can in our own lives, and try to share it with others, which is an activity that is very pleasing to the Lord. In this way, it will be beneficial for us and beneficial for others as well. And Krishna will be pleased to see the numbers of devotees increasing more and more. So I had request to speak a little bit more about some experiences with Srila Prabhupada and also preaching in various countries. I related yesterday evening some experiences with Srila Prabhupada in Mumbai, and whilst I was on the library party, towards the end of our time on the library party, we had traveled all over India. We had covered most of the main universities and libraries. So we started to visit some of the neighboring countries to sell Satya Bhagavan. We went to Sri Lanka and to Nepal and to Bangladesh. Before I went to Bangladesh on the library party, Srila Prabhupada had asked me to make some research about the Gaudiya Math in Dhaka. The Gaudiya Math in Dhaka was the construction of that temple was begun by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur himself. Of course, that time it was part of India, East Bengal. Srila Prabhupada himself went there on a number of occasions in connection with his pharmaceutical business. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur preached there on many occasions. If one reads the biography of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, it's described many, many visits to Dhaka. Of course, very close to Calcutta and Mayapur. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to travel by train, and they'd sometimes have a whole train full of devotees, or at least one or two wagons full of devotees, and they would stop in different stations. And if there was a whole train, they'd stop in different stations and hold a program on the platform. And then they would go on to the next place. This was big time preaching on the Indian railways. Anyway, he went to Dhaka many times, and it's there in Dhaka that he spoke on the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam for 3 months. That's a very famous, Prabhupada's explaining how, just in one verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's so much transcendental knowledge, and how his spiritual master spoke for 3 months on the one verse. So that took place in Dhaka. And he acquired a very prestigious property in the center of the city. Well, the then city, what's known as Old Dhaka. In due course, Dhaka has expanded very much in newer areas of town since then. Many other districts are there. So it's no longer really the center of the city, but it's the center of the old city. And he got in many cities of India, you can see the types of properties that were donated to the Gaudiya Math as a result of his preaching. He cultivated the intelligent class of men, wealthy class of men, and they were willing to reciprocate and give valuable properties and construct nice temples. Gaudiya Math has many nice temples throughout India. So Dhaka was a very, nice property, and he had constructed during his lifetime, Mandir, big Mandir, but Mandir just for the deities. And then Nat Mandir was under construction, very big also, but it wasn't finished during his lifetime, or even before the partition of India. And Dhaka, of course, became part of East Pakistan. So the work was lying unfinished, and Prabhupada, he had heard that there might be some interest to give it to ISKCON. He himself was very interested to take charge of that property. So he asked me to try to find out some information about that, who was managing it, who the illegal trustees were and so on and so forth. So you went to Bangladesh and did some research and also sold some books there in the various libraries. I could see that it was a very good potential place for preaching Krishna consciousness. And the same in Nepal also. When we went there, that was also a very potential place. So at that time it was in 1977, around the time of Mayapur Festival, I got offered to go to Eastern Europe. The Library Party was going to go into behind the Iron Curtain to East Germany, Hungary, Poland, Czechoslovakia, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, and some other devotees were planning to go. So I got an invitation to go there. I came to Mumbai to consult Srila Prabhupada sometime after the festival. But I was thinking maybe even more interesting would be to go to Bangladesh. So Garga Muni Swami, as the leader of our library party, he didn't want me to leave the Indian Library Party. And he knew I wanted to speak to Srila Prabhupada. So he told Srila Prabhupada's then secretary, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, that, don't let him into Prabhupada's room without a letter from me. So I wasn't able to get in there. And Prabhupada at that time, he was staying in his new quarters, which were on the top floor of one of the towers at Juhu. The work wasn't completely finished, but Prabhupada insisted in moving in there. And one day I was in the servants' quarters outside Prabhupada's room. The door opened, the servants were coming and going for some reason. Prabhupada was sitting behind his desk, so he saw me, he called me in. Because actually, Hansaduda, he was introduced to go to Sri Lanka. He was, I think, maybe even started something, had been there. And he told Prabhupada that I was interested in going to Bangladesh. So Prabhupada saw me, he called me in. He said, "You have made the right decision." He said, "You should go immediately to Bangladesh. This is a very good field for preaching." In fact, at one stage, Prabhupada wanted Garga Muni to take all these vans to Bangladesh because they were on some kind of, they were foreign registered vehicles. They were on something which is called carnet de passage. It allows a vehicle to stay in India for like 6 months at a time. So you're supposed to take them out somewhere, and Prabhupada told him to take them to Bangladesh, but he didn't do it. He was overconfident. He thought, "I'll just keep them in India. They'll preach to the customs officials, and they let us keep these vehicles permanently in India without paying the tax." Those days, the tax, was like 200% of the value of the vehicle or something like that. It wasn't very practical to pay the tax. Of course, they are much better than the Indian vehicles, like Matadors we had. We didn't have very good Indian vehicles in those days. I remember we were in... the customs actually, then they sent out a notice to confiscate the vehicles. And one by one, they got picked up in different parts of India. We were in Darjeeling selling books, and some police came over and asked us some questions. And then, we left. We were going down towards Siliguri. We were stopped on the way in Kalimpong. They confiscated the van. We had like, 50 boxes of books, just put them out on the street, took the van away. We had to get in the bus and take all these books. We took them to Assam and distributed them there. Anyhow, Garga Muni, he hadn't wanted me to leave the party, but, what could he say? The Prabhupada immediately ordered to go to Bangladesh. And then I went to Delhi to get a visa. Prabhupada, in the meantime, also came to Delhi And I was in Darshan in his room. He saw me. He said, "What? You haven't gone yet?" It was only a few days later. I said, "I'm trying to get a visa." Srila probably said, "Yes, you go immediately." That was in April, I think, of 77. And just prior to that, Jaipataka Maharaj had been actually made GBC of Calcutta and Mayapur. Gargamuni was then just in charge of the library party. So, and he was also made GBC of Bangladesh. So he himself went there just before I went there with a few devotees. And when I arrived there, he was there. And we started to do programs together. And there was immediate, very good response. Wherever we went, thousands of people would gather. We had brought some trunks of books from Mayapur with small books like Gita Gan, Hare Krishna Jug, and other books. And when we set up book table, the book table would be swamped. The book table would be knocked over. All the books would be taken. So we used to have to keep the books inside like a locked room, you know, which had like bars on the window, and then sell the books like that so there would be some order. So there was very good response like that. but after Jaipataka Maharaj went back to Mayapur for some urgent business, we continued with the program. We were based then in a temple called Radha Govinda Mandir in Dhaka city, which is sort of smaller size version of our Vrindavan temple, that same style, you know, with the three altars and a darshan mandap and then a courtyard. It was belonging to a family called Bonik. They were trustees. But they gave us a couple of rooms and we were staying there and based there. Many years later, that family moved out from the temple and it was donated to ISKCON. So it's now one of our temples in Dhaka city. But anyhow, we were traveling in different parts of the country. And once we were in the south of Bangladesh, and we were arrested after the program by some special police sent by the National Security and Intelligence. And they took us back to Dhaka. You know, they had guns and everything, and they held us for about 12 hours in a city there, at Barishal in south of Bangladesh, and then we had to come by ferry steamer, overnight steamer, back to Dhaka. And we were brought straight into the office of the National Director of Security and Intelligence. And he had all these newspaper cuttings spread out over his desk relating to an incident in Mayapur. Some Muslims attacked the temple, and to scare them away, the devotees, you know, they fired some shots in the air. But in Bangladesh, I think that Bhavananda was arrested, and devotees were arrested, and they were paraded through the streets of Navadvip. And Prabhupada, you know, he was very upset by all of that, but he also considered the devotees to be very heroic, that they'd suffered so much difficulty in protecting Mayapur. But in Bangladesh, there was a slant on the newspaper articles, and it said, like, "Cruel foreign Vaishnavas shoot timid Muslim villagers." So, the director of intelligence and security, he said, "You know, you see these articles," he said, "I think it's dangerous for you to go on preaching in this country right now. You know, you're doing these big programs. Someone could attack you. These articles stir up the kind of anti-Hindu sentiment, anti-ISKCON sentiment." So he said, "You'll have to leave this country." But he said, you can come back after some time. Actually, he was a pretty decent fellow. But they gave us a letter that we are persona non grata. We must leave within 7 days. Somehow they didn't blacklist us completely because I've been able to go back and without problems ever since. Anyway, we had to leave and came back to Mayapur. And Jive Takamaraj asked me to head up a bus party in West Bengal. But I also had the desire of going to Nepal. So he sent me to see Srila Prabhupada in Vrindavan. He gave me a letter describing a little bit about the preaching in Bangladesh and also mentioning that I was interested to go to Nepal. So I went to Vrindavan, and it was about July 77. I was allowed to come and see Prabhupada. He was sitting up on the roof of his house in Vrindavan. And I never seen him in such ill health. He looked very, very thin, and he had big dark glasses. When he came and offered obeisances, and he'd already read the letter. So he was very happy with the preaching that we'd been doing in Bangladesh. And he encouraged me to go to Nepal and try to start something. He said, they have got the sentiment of Hinduism, he said, so Hindu kingdom, so you establish a stronghold of Krishna consciousness there. And then he told a story about an English poet, a Bengali poet called Michael Madhusudan Datta, who had gone to England, and he spent all his money. I guess he was kind of a reckless fellow. And so he was asking everyone, please give me money, please give me money. And no one would give him money, but finally he met one gentleman called Vidyasagar, some Indian or Bengali gentleman, who gave him some money. And so he was a very poetic fellow. He said to Vidyasagar that you have got the courage of an Englishman and the heart of a Bengali mother. So Prabhupada said to me, similarly he said, you should preach with the courage of an Englishman and the heart of a Bengali mother. He said, the British, they were famous for their courage and their expansion of their empire. The empire was expanded all over the world. So similarly, you expand the empire of Krishna consciousness. Actually, a couple of times he told me that. He also once in Bombay told me the same thing, to expand the empire of Krishna consciousness. He said, do it with the courage of an Englishman and the heart of a Bengali mother. And during the conversation, he said it several times. And right at the end, he said, take the courage of an Englishman and the heart of a Bengali mother, like that. So that was a very nice blessing from Srila Prabhupada. He also offered us financial support because those countries are very poor, and I had the idea of going to the West to collect some Lakshmi and come back and be able to support ourselves, because especially in Nepal, just to extend a visa, you had to change $150 a month. Otherwise, you couldn't even extend beyond 1 month. Every month you had to show that you changed that much. So Prabhupada said, you don't worry about money. He said, ISKCON, if there's one thing ISKCON has no shortage of, it's money. He said, how much do you need? I told him, well, we are going to Nepal, four Western devotees, and one Nepali devotee is coming with us. There was one Nepali devotee who I had met. I had actually met him on the bus when I was in the library party in Nepal, and he'd become interested, and there was actually a small center there run by a devotee called Damodar Pandit, You know, he'd gone there with Hansa Duda on their bus party and stayed behind. So I brought him there, and he got interested in Krishna consciousness. And then he came to Vrindavan and stayed there, got Prabhupada's associate. But he didn't get initiated, actually, by Prabhupada. Somehow or other, we went to Nepal with him, and Prabhupada disappeared while we were in Nepal. So he didn't get initiated. Later he got initiated by Jabhataka Maharaj. His name is Bhakti Siddhanta Das. He's still a devotee there. But anyhow, Prabhupada said, I said that's four devotees, $150 a month each, it's $600. He said, open a bank account in Kathmandu, I'll send you the money every month, which he did. And it continued long time after his departure also. And he said, for Bangladesh, you can take foreign currency and print books and preach there. So he also sponsored from BBT for printing books. And later, also from his Guru Dakshin, some Lakshmi was given. The MVT Trust, Mayapur Vrindavan Trust, is where Prabhupada put most of his Guru Dakshin. So from there, he was authorizing these kind of payments and also grants and loans for constructing various temples. So in this way, we were able to start. We got a house in Kathmandu and began to preach there. And it was good response. So Prabhupada asked me to develop both of those places. And that's 30 years now, still working. And gradually, Krishna consciousness is spreading. And had the chance to go to some other countries as well, like in Myanmar. Vamsi Gopal Prabhu knows well. He helps us a lot there with the preaching activities. Malaysia also. Thailand also. We went to Thailand and started a center there. So nowadays in Bangladesh there's 25 centers. Many nice properties have been given to ISKCON. His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj has visited quite a few of those places. Some of them are holy places. Rupa Sanatan Tirtha, which is just near the birthplace of Rupa Sanatan Goswami's Pundrik Dam, which is the birthplace of Pundrik Vidyanidhi. Nearby also we have a small bhajan kutirs of Mukunda and Vasudev Datta. In Sylhet area, we have a number of projects, although none of them are directly in the holy places, but that area is, except for one, yes, Advaitacharya's birthplace. We have property there, and it's a very remote place. You have to go by river. But one gentleman from Singapore has promised a donation to construct a temple there. We have just some tin buildings there, but every year there's a very big festival and we distribute a lot of prasadam. But also in Sylhet area, Jagannath Mishra and Sachi Mada appeared, Madhavendra Puri. His birthplace actually very close to Advaita Acharya's birthplace. One can, I've not been there, but you know, by maybe 3-4 hours walking, one can get there. So I hope to go there at some stage. It's very remote. It's near the border of Meghalaya. You can see the backdrop of the mountains of Meghalaya, Indian border, from Advaita Acharya's birthplace. So there's very good response amongst the public there, because it's their culture. East Bengal was famous for Vaishnavism. West Bengal, they're more Shakti worshippers. Kalikata is named after Kali. but Nityananda Prabhu, Haridas, they preached a lot. When Lord Chaitanya told them to stay in Bengal and preach, they preached a lot in East Bengal. Haridas Thakur's birthplace is also there. And therefore there's a strong sentiment for Vaishnavism, Gaudiya Vaishnavism, even though it's majority Muslim country now. So we, but still there are probably about 15 million Hindus. and there's a very good response, and movement has gained a lot of momentum. There are thousands of devotees, and expect it will expand more and more. There's not much competition either from other Hindu organizations. Ramakrishna Mission is there, but you know, they don't have a very powerful preaching spirit, and other Hindu organizations are practically insignificant there. So ISKCON is the most prominent and well-respected organization among the Hindu society, and we often get Muslim ministers coming to our programs and, you know, speaking some nice words. I was in Dhaka for Rath Yatra a couple of years back, and the mayor of Dhaka came. The Rath Yatra was attended by around 30,000 people. I mean, the whole city was completely closed for the Rath Yatra. It goes right through all the Muslim areas, and still, somehow they haven't given any trouble to ISKCON. Even though there have been times, like when the mosque was dismantled in Ayodhya, there were some problems in Bangladesh. A lot of Hindu temples were broken, and even some mob did come outside our temple, but the local Muslims stopped them and told them to go away, that ISKCON is a good organization, leave them alone, like that. So, but in general, we don't have any problems there with the government or anything like that. So we expect the movement to go on expanding. Bangladesh exports many devotees. Many devotees come to Mayapur and other temples and serve. And Nepal also, because they're poor countries, of course, some devotees get the desire to go to other countries. And so many Nepali devotees also serving in India and other parts of the world, and they're well known for being steady and loyal to ISKCON. And in Myanmar also, most of the devotees are Nepali, actually. They're Nepalis who have been settled there for several generations. And the Sringa Maharaj also told me that many of those Burmese Nepali devotees live in Thailand now, so they also have a very big following there. So in that way, there are actually many Nepali devotees in these different countries. Myanmar now has around, I think it's about 10 centers we have. That's also a nice field for preaching. We printed the Bhagavad Gita in Burmese language last year, and this year we plan to print in Nepali and Hindi inside Myanmar. You cannot import books there. We have to print them there. And in Malaysia also is a very nice preaching field. I wanted to ask Srila Prabhupada if I could go there, but somehow or other, you know, his departure occurred and I wasn't able to do it. But I had a letter from my godbrother, Bhakti Vijendra Nandan Swami. He had been collecting for Vrindavan Temple in Holland, and he was deported back to Malaysia, so we were communicating, and he asked me to come over and, you know, check out the situation, which I did, and it seemed like a good field for preaching. Actually, it was prior to that. We were in Vrindavan. It was the departure of, just after Prabhupada's departure, we were there for that disappearance ceremony, and there was a small samadhi, and I remember we were sitting there, and I was, you know, praying to Prabhupada about preaching in Malaysia, and his garland fell off, and the pujari came and gave it to us, so I took it as a, you know, sign from Srila Prabhupada that we should go there and preach there. So the opportunity came up, and there were some Malaysian devotees in England, and I asked the then GBC Jaitirtha if they could go. So he said, you check it out first, and if you think it's good, then I'll let them go. So he agreed, and then they went there, and this way established the first center. So gradually Krishna Conscious Movement has grown up. There's about 25 centers there now. A lot of it's due to the inspiration of Jayapataka Maharaj and his congregational preaching. He's inspired tremendous development there through the Indian congregation. So we have probably about 30 Rathiatras a year also in Malaysia. So it's also a very nice preaching field. So in this way, had some opportunity to serve Srila Prabhupada in these different countries, and later also got the opportunity to preach in the former Soviet Union. And I first went in 86. It was still a time when many devotees were in prison, and we had to be very careful there. We went as tourists in tourist groups. We had to stay in hotels and meet the devotees in their apartments. But it was amazing to see how many devotees were there. Nobody knew in the rest of it. It was a very closely kept secret. Harikesh Maharaj and Kirti Raj, they were in charge. They wouldn't let any information out. But they recruited me to go there because, you know, they knew I had some experience of kind of undercover preaching and going to Myanmar and Bangladesh. And they themselves couldn't go. They'd been blacklisted some years before. So it was quite an amazing experience. And then I got to go every year, and gradually things got opened up more and more. And the cost of going and staying in hotels was very high. That's something like $100 a night. I had some sponsor. In 89, we made a big tour. We went to Uzbekistan, Azerbaijan, and Georgia, Ukraine, places that we'd never been before. And in all the places, there were so many devotees. It was amazing how much the movement had spread. And, you know, they were producing books. They would Xerox the books, and then in their apartments, they would stick them together, glue them, sew them, and bind them by hand. Then devotees would take them all over the country at great risk. Many devotees were put in prison for printing books. But the effect was that so many people became Krishna conscious. So he saw, you know, how widely expanded it was. So then I tried to find a different way to stay in the country, and found out that by taking a Russian language course, you could get a visa much more cheaply. So I enrolled in the winter of 89 and started to study Russian language. And I had to stay in the university halls of residence. But it still, I found out that if devotees would send a telegram from the city where they were living inviting me, there was a department in the university that would get permission. You had to get permits to go to all the different cities. They would get permission. So it was very good. I used to study like from Monday afternoon till Thursday morning, just a couple of hours a day. In the evenings, I would go and do programs in Moscow in the devotees' homes, in their flats. These flats are small, and they would be packed up, you know, with like 50, 100 people. And then on a Thursday in the afternoon, I get permission to go to two cities every weekend. Thursday afternoon, go somewhere, stay Thursday and Friday night. Saturday, go to another city, stay Saturday, Sunday night, have programs, and come back on Monday morning, go back to university on Monday afternoon. So in that way, I started to learn Russian language. And then gradually, things opened up. ISKCON got registered, and we were able to get religious visas to go there officially and preach. We can still get those. So it's been very interesting, exciting development now. There are huge festivals in Russia. His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj often comes to the festival in South Russia. Ukraine also, you come, Maharaj, sometimes. That's also a very big festival. His Holiness Naranja Maharaj is very involved in the preaching in all these places. Probably about 2,000 devotees come to Ukraine festival, about 3,500 come to the South Russian festival. And there are other festivals as well. In Siberia, there are two festivals, Western Siberia and Eastern Siberia. Eastern Siberian festival this year, just last summer, there would have been about 800 devotees present just from that region. So in every region of Russia, there are many devotees in quite a number of centers, many Namahata groups. In a way, it's a very wonderful preaching field as well. I also been working in Australia for about 20 years, and there also, you know, there's quite a lot of centers and restaurants. Of course, it's a Western country, and the expansion isn't nearly so rapid, but still, ISKCON has a very good reputation there, and there are good congregations in all the temples. And especially due to the preaching of His Holiness Devamrita Maharaj, quite a lot of new devotees are joining, especially in New Zealand. He's got a very cutting-edge style of preaching, loft preaching, where they have a separate center, and they have Hatha Yoga courses and also some seminars on Bhagavad Gita and other topics. And this way they attract people, but they give a lot of personal attention to the people who come, take prasadam with them, and that way many Westerners have joined. It's a very successful formula. So in this way, preaching Krishna consciousness is very interesting in many different types of places. It's a very special mercy from Srila Prabhupada to have that opportunity and to have the association of so many wonderful devotees in so many different countries. So we thank you very much. And we're trying to follow in your footsteps. The example that you set here in Chaupati is very wonderful. And we're trying to implement many of the programs in different places, Malaysia, Bangladesh also, and hopefully that will bear fruit in due course of time. So thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Bhaktivrinda ki, Gaura Premanandi.